Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Who will be Maryland's next governor? At least 10 Democrats and 4 Republicans are campaigning for their party's nominations, and more could file before the April 15th deadline. Voters will narrow down this election in the primary election on July 19th. The primary includes nominating races for governor, a U.S. Senate seat, congressional seats, state delegates and senators, and many county and local positions. Early voting begins July 7th. Joining me to kick off on the record's profiles of gubernatorial candidates is Democrat John King, who served as U.S. Secretary of Education under President Obama. Before that, he was New York State's Commissioner of Education. He's now on leave from his position as president of the nonprofit The Education Trust, which seeks to close the achievement gap. King lives in Silver Spring. If elected, he would be the first Black and Latino governor of Maryland. John King, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for the opportunity to join you.
Why are you running?
Well, really, my decision to run for governor is grounded in the same values that led me to pursue a career in public service in the first place, a deep belief in the role that public institutions can play in people's lives. And I know that because public schools saved my life as a kid. Both my parents passed away when I was little, my mom when I was 8 and my dad when I was 12. And in the period when it was just my dad and me, my dad was struggling with Alzheimer's. Home was incredibly difficult. And the thing that saved me was school. So I know how much public schools matter, how much public institutions matter, and I believe government in Maryland can be a powerful force for good in education and providing economic dignity and tackling climate change. And those are all the issues I want to work on as governor.
You haven't run for elective office before. Why start with governor?
Well, you know, as Secretary of Education, I was responsible for a budget, actually $15 billion bigger than the budget of the state of Maryland, overseeing the education of 50 million kids in our nation's public schools and more than 20 million folks who are in our higher ed institutions. So I have the preparation and real experience in getting big things done in government and a real sense of urgency about the opportunities that we can seize in Maryland to build a more just and prosperous future.
What do you see as the most pressing issues to further Maryland's recovery from the public health and economic impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, clearly the pandemic has put into sharp relief so many of the inequities in our state. And we have an opportunity, I think, really for a New Deal moment where we tackle some of our deeper systemic challenges. The General Assembly just passed last session major school funding reform legislation that will get more resources to our highest needs schools and allow us to ensure all of our students get a world-class education. The next governor will need to implement that. We have major economic dignity challenges. We don't have paid family leave in Maryland. We should. We don't have universal child care in Maryland. We should. We don't have health care as a human right in Maryland. We still have many Marylanders who are without health care. And we saw during COVID that folks who didn't have health care were disproportionately among those who died from COVID. So we ought to ensure healthcare for all in Maryland. And we need an economic recovery that is robust across regions and sectors so that we really achieve shared prosperity.
One of the problems that seems baked in these days is housing. Housing prices and rent soared during the pandemic. A survey of registered voters by the Maryland Association of Realtors found that 70% think the price to buy or rent in their part of the state is too high. 1 in 5 voters is very or somewhat worried about missing a rent or mortgage payment in the next 3 months. How would you address housing affordability?
You know, we have real challenges in terms of the supply of housing that folks can afford. And there are several things we should do to tackle that. One is we need to invest in our housing trust fund. You know, DC has a housing trust fund into which in the year before COVID, they were putting nearly $200 million. In Maryland, we put about $50 million into our housing trust fund in the period from the late 90s till about 2018. We just haven't invested enough in making sure that we're building affordable housing. We need statewide zoning to make sure that it is easier to build, particularly near transit hubs. We should have more housing density, more multifamily units near metro stops, MARC stops. That'll be good for the supply of housing. It will also be good for the environment. And we need to be much more intentional about ensuring that developers are setting aside a portion of the housing that they build for affordable units. This is a place where the state really could be leading, but hasn't been during the Hogan administration.
So that zoning isn't really a county function now, a local function. You think the state should be more involved?
That's right. I think the state leadership is critical, because what happens is, if you know, if, as you described, if you survey folks, people say we need more supply of housing. But then whenever there's a plan to build a specific project, you see a ton of local opposition gather. And so we really need a thoughtful statewide policy around zoning that helps ensure the supply of housing that we need.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with former U.S. Secretary of Education John King, who's seeking the Democratic nomination for governor of Maryland. Maryland's minimum wage now stands at $12.20 an hour and is on track to hit $15 an hour by 2025. Is this high enough? Fast enough?
No. I mean, we ought to get to the $15 as soon as possible. And one of the things I would do as governor is accelerate the move to the $15 minimum wage and then index the minimum wage to inflation so that the minimum wage is moving up with inflation and maintaining purchasing power. We can do that in Maryland, and it will actually help spur greater economic growth, because folks who are making the minimum wage are folks who are going to spend a good portion of what they earn immediately on products. And so it's good for the economy to have that $15 minimum wage, and we should get there faster.
But as you know, businesses say they've been walloped by higher expenses because of the pandemic. They can't afford to pay more.
As I talk to business leaders throughout the state, their biggest challenge is recruiting workers. We have a real shortage. And so higher wages will help attract people back into the workforce, putting in place paid family leave so that folks are able to take time when they have a new baby or when they have a sick family member. That will also make it easier for folks to stay in the workforce. Providing universal child care that's affordable will help address the incredible delay we've seen in women returning to the workforce in the post-COVID era. And so we have an opportunity, I think, through state policy to address the worker shortage, improve wages, and build a stronger economy.
What will you do to attract living wage jobs to the state?
One of the challenges we have is we don't have a good match between the skills of a lot of our workforce and many of the jobs that are available. So, for example, in the greater Washington, D.C. area, we've got thousands upon thousands of open jobs in cybersecurity. But we haven't invested enough in training folks for those jobs. We should grow programs at our community colleges, at our public four-year institutions, and particularly at our historically Black colleges and universities to prepare folks for those jobs. We should see the green economy as an opportunity to grow great jobs in wind, in solar, in geothermal. You know, we just had a steel facility announced that it will be reopening in Baltimore County to provide steel for wind turbines throughout the Mid-Atlantic. That's an indication of what's possible if we move quickly to take action on climate and build a greener economy.
Baltimore's Red Line, an east-west mass transit light rail line, had a $2.9 billion price tag in 2015. You want to bring the Red Line plan back. How would you pay for it?
Well, fortunately, Senator Van Hoen and Senator Cardin have really been leading on this to make sure that we will get significant federal matching funds to help us to build the Red Line. The Red Line will create real economic development opportunities in Baltimore by reconnecting neighborhoods where there are a lot of folks struggling economically with where the jobs are. And that's just one of the investments we should make. As we leverage the federal bipartisan infrastructure dollars, we should also expand the MARC train west. We should have more frequent MARC trains. We should build the Southern Maryland Light Rail Project. The next governor needs to make sure we finish the Purple Line. And as we invest in rail, we also have to invest in buses, which are a critical form of transportation for so many Marylanders.
I want to pick up on your point about global warming. The Maryland Senate recently passed the Climate Solutions Now Act of 2022, setting a course for the state to cut its greenhouse gas emissions to net zero by 2045. Your goal is even more ambitious.
Yes. Look, we're already seeing the consequences of climate change throughout the state. I was just down on the Eastern Shore last weekend hearing from farmers about the loss of farmland to saltwater intrusion. We have flooding regularly in many parts of the state. Ellicott City, we had significant flooding in Annapolis and Baltimore not long ago. So climate change is a today problem, not a 50 years from now problem. And we can see from the current gas price challenges that we are hostage to despots with oil fields. The solution long term is to move to renewable energy and create good jobs in doing that. We could move much more quickly to build out wind, offshore wind, as well as wind farms. We should be investing in solar. We should be moving our public buildings over to net zero with solar panels, with geothermal heating and cooling. We should be moving our state fleet, our school buses and our public buses over to electric. We should be building 10,000 electric charging stations around the state so we can move much more quickly to an electric vehicle future. But we shouldn't see it as trading the economy against climate action. Actually, climate action will help us grow good jobs.
We need to take a short break in this conversation with Democratic candidate for Maryland Governor John King. When we're back, his plans on K-12 and higher education. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. My guest today is John King, former U.S. Secretary of Education under President Obama, former New York State Commissioner of Education. King is running for the Democratic nomination in the race to be Maryland's next governor. The primary election is scheduled for July 19th. Last year, lawmakers overrode Governor Larry Hogan's veto of the Blueprint for Maryland's Future, which set in motion an overhaul of the state's public education system. The blueprint is supposed to increase education funding by $3.8 billion each year over the next 10 years. John King, what do you view as the most significant change the blueprint will make if implemented?
Well, the key in the blueprint is trying to ensure world-class education for every Maryland student. There's no question we have great schools in Maryland. The problem is not all of our kids today have access to that level of opportunity. So the blueprint will invest more resources in our highest needs districts. It will help us raise teacher pay, recruit strong, diverse teachers to the profession. We'll make all of our high poverty schools community schools with wraparound services like mental health services, adult education programs for families. It will expand pre-K, which is critical. We know how important early childhood education is to students' long-term success. And it comes with real accountability to make sure that districts are using the resources well and getting the resources to the highest needs kids. This is a phenomenal opportunity. I was proud to work with other civil rights organizations to advocate for the blueprint and the veto override and look forward to implementing it as governor. That said, we should see it as the floor, not the ceiling. There's more to be done to make sure that we're investing in things like mental health services and school counselors, which are so desperately needed as we recover from COVID.
You were expelled from high school, as I understand it, an unusual occurrence for a Secretary of Education. What did that tell you about what schools should do to keep kids attached?
You know, having both of my parents pass away when I was little and having that period when it was just my dad and me, my dad was struggling with Alzheimer's. I didn't know what he'd be like from one night to the next. And then after my dad passed, moving around between family members and schools, I really struggled a lot in high school, like many kids who've experienced trauma, got kicked out. And the thing that saved me was school. Teachers and a school counselor who were willing to give me a second chance, who were willing to invest in me. And we need more of those kinds of second chance opportunities. We need to invest more in school counselors and mental health services. We need to reform our juvenile justice system to make sure that young people who get off track get the intervention that they need, positive relationships with adults who will invest in them and give them a sense of hope and purpose. And if we do that, we actually, in the long run, will save money, because if we fail to intervene with young people who are struggling, those are often the young people who end up involved in crime and violence, end up incarcerated, end up reliant on social services. So much better to make that investment in a network of support around them. We can help them stay on track, succeed in college and careers, and go on to be contributors to the community.
Looking at community college, Maryland's Community College Promise Program now offers up to $5,000 in community college tuition to eligible full-time students. How would you change this?
Well, one of the challenges with the current Promise Program is a lot of fine print that makes it hard sometimes for students to access the program. Many of the students in our community colleges need to go part-time in order to continue to make progress. We really should see community college as an extension of our K-12 system. I believe we should have free community college where students are able to complete that two-year degree. For some students, that will then lead to transferring to a four-year institution. And for other students, that two-year degree aligned to a good 21st century job will translate into immediate economic opportunity. Again, this is an opportunity for us as a state to invest in our future workforce.
That's John King, former Secretary of Education in the Obama administration. He's running for the Democratic nomination for Maryland governor. I'm Sheila Cast, on the record on WYPR. The primary election is scheduled for July 19th. Since 2015, Baltimore City has seen more than 300 homicides each year. What support will you offer Baltimore to address violent crime if you're governor?
The goal has to be to ensure public safety while respecting people's civil rights. Too often those two things are seen as in conflict with each other, and I believe we can have both public safety and civil rights protection. The way we get there is, of course, we need police, and they need to be focused on investigating murders and stopping the flow of illegal guns. But we need more than just policing. We also need violence prevention programs like Safe Streets, which has been proven to help reduce violence and break the cycle of violence. We ought to invest in mental health services and addiction treatment. We ought to invest in mentoring programs for young people and summer jobs for our teens. We should have a strategy that is about supporting the community to achieve public safety. And as we do that, we have to think long-term about economic development in Baltimore. If the red line had been built, there'd be less crime and violence today. because more folks would have good jobs. We need to think about folks who are incarcerated. 95% of the people who are incarcerated will be coming home. We've got to make sure that while incarcerated, folks are getting job training and education, as well as mental health services, and that there are reentry supports so that when they come home, they can be productive rather than being drawn right back into the things that got them into prison in the first place.
Your website includes a Black agenda and says it's not a single policy, it's a lens through which you view every part of your platform. What is the message to the 30% of Maryland residents who are Black and the message to everyone else?
Look, we have real racial disparities in the state, and our state has a complex history around race. You know, I live in Silver Spring, Maryland, about 25 miles from where my great-grandfather was enslaved in Gaithersburg, Maryland. I'm very conscious that so many of our challenges today are tied to the history of slavery, the history of segregation, the history of redlining. We see disparities in wealth, in health, in our criminal justice system. Maryland incarcerates young Black men at the highest rate in the country. So we need to tackle those racial disparities. We need intentional policies to invest in communities that have been historically underserved, whether that's building the Red Line in Baltimore, whether that's making sure we do smart mixed-use development around the metro stops in Prince George's County, whether that's ensuring that our businesses that are owned by people of color and women have real access to participating in state contracts through procurement reform. We've got to have an agenda that says a successful Maryland is an equitable Maryland where everyone, regardless of race, has an opportunity to succeed.
What will be your top priority as governor?
Education is, I think, at the foundation of the health of our state, and ensuring that we follow through on the blueprint, that we build on it, see it as the floor, not the ceiling for our investment in young people, that we invest in early childhood education and higher education so that all Marylanders have the tools to succeed in the 21st century economy. That will be the top priority. And we've got a lot of good momentum because the blueprint passed, because educators across the state are ready to build that world-class education for every child.
And what sets you apart from your competitors in the Democratic primary?
You know, a couple things. One is experience getting things done in government. We've got a number of folks running who either haven't been in government before or haven't run anything particularly large before. I think it's important that one come to the role with experience. And then second, I've been the candidate in this race who's been most clear about the specific things that I think government can do to improve the quality of life in Maryland. And too many of my opponents are reliant on platitudes rather than specific policies that will make a difference in people's everyday lives. But that's the role of government, and starts with education, but reaches every aspect of our economy.
Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks so much.
John King is running for the Democratic nomination in the race to be Maryland's next governor. You can find more information out about his plans at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. And this Thursday, another Democratic gubernatorial candidate will join us, former Prince George's County Executive Rashern Baker. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Come back tomorrow.